Again, Simid Reish Membeis in Yoredeya is a gold mine, you know, for these kind of process type issues. You know, again, truth and process, you know, etiquette, you know, which isn't just etiquette, all these issues, like one halakha after the other. There's also a whole discussion in the Yoredeya there, you know, about, I'll read maybe just the discussion of the Bechaber and the Rama, about, you know, overturning other people's psakim, you know, whether, and what the parameters are on that. That's the same Simon Lamed Aleph. So there's a lot more. We did not exhaust in any way this topic. And again, we have to move on. I didn't know that we had the luxury of having another year, you know, to get through everything. But the obviously there's much more to do. But just a few quick comments of things that we've already been discussing. The idea that Roy Lahoros may allow for some liberalism, not only on the technical side of Bikias, but even on Bikias itself, something we discuss in terms of the Ksos and the Menachas Chinuch. So it's interesting that the Meiri Alatar also seems to relate to this. In terms of the Rishonim, he's the only one who's explicit about it, and he too seems to consider that the, you know, less or lack of full Bikias is not a chisaron in Roy Lahoros B'chol HaTorah Kula. So that's something to look at. Another point worth thinking about is that some of the Achronim raise the question, when you have a partial license, either in terms of Miktsoa or in terms of Tanai, so what impact does that have on the capacity to transmit Smicha to others? In other words, we know that a Samuch is Masmich. And the question is whether Samuch who receives, let's say, you know, only Yadin Yadin and not, you know, Yore Yore, or vice versa, or whatever it is, what is his capacity to be Masmich Acherim in that wider way? And both, the question is a dual question. Is it conceivable that he can be Masmich others, you know, beyond what he himself is, you know, licensed to practice? That's an interesting question. On the surface, one would think not, but as we'll explain in just a second, and you know what I'm about to say, maybe it isn't so pashut. In the other direction, do we view the limitations in terms of miktsoa or timing or other conditions as somehow weakening the smicha? Is this a compromised or a weakened smicha, such that he doesn't have the ability to transmit, you know, even what he has?
Right.
So there can be, there can be three possibilities. He can transmit what he has, or the conditions that he has, you know, both in terms of miktsoa and other, you know, circumstances. In theory, you could also be mechalik between the miktsoa and the tanai issue, possibly. He can transmit more, and he can transmit less. Now, the idea of transmitting less or more need, of course, further elaboration. But pashtus, you know, you can't, you know, give to others what you yourself don't have. So really the question is to assess, you know, what it means when you don't have it. So on the one hand, you know, being a royal horus of Chol HaTorah Kula, assuming that that's a condition, you know, establishes that you are, you know, connected, you know, with all the mikzos and all the conditions. And to put it in the way that we've been discussing it all year, you know, if you emphasize the korele rebbe part of it, meaning the status of the stature, and that's part of why he has to be a royal horus b'chol HaTorah Kula. So then what you might think is that the inability to practice, you know, the imposition of certain conditions or the narrowing of your license is kind of an anomaly. You know, that's what's artificial. You know, really, you're a walking Sefer Torah. You're part of the Chachmei HaMesorah. And you can crown someone as a, you know, also as a member of the Chachmei, you know, HaMesorah. You are limited, okay, so you are limited, but that doesn't mean smicha by definition isn't about, it's not the aggregate of all your licenses, it's a holistic, status of the Gavra. And, you know, if you have that, then, if you didn't have it, you wouldn't have it, you know, in anything. And if you do have it, then you can transmit it. So it looks peculiar and overextending, but it isn't really peculiar at all, because the impediments and the limitations are artificial, and therefore they're, you know, inconsequential, you know, when it comes to this particular issue. On the other side of it, if you think that, you know, the limitations are not inconsequential, or one way to say this may also be that if you think that, you know, the either there are two dinim, or at least that the din of, you know, nosan lo reshus ladun is the ikar din of smicha, although it also requires an aspect of korele rebbe. So then, like we said, you know, it's not artificial when you're limited. It's expansive when you're fully licensed. Again, and partially, as we already noted, right, this is, you know, within the Rambam already, we have different formulations, whether you're naturally, you know, licensed for everything unless you're held back, or you're naturally, you know, only given as much license as you're given, and you really need an extra minui or and so on. So the point is that from that point of view, you might not only justify that you can't give more than you have, because that becomes something more fundamental, and at least on the license level, if not on the full level, but you may even go further and say that, you know, a real samuch, you know, gamur, can make you a miktsas samuch, but maybe a miktsas samuch, you know, can't even make a miktsas samuch. Maybe he's, you know, a lower form or a lesser samuch. There's a critical conceptual question in all of this. So this is something, I saw this in one of the Achronim some years ago, the Einayim L'Mishpat, where he has this suffix. He assumes as Avraham Pashut that in one way, that you certainly cannot license beyond what you have. That he assumes as Avraham Pashut, and his suffix is whether or not your limitation means you can't even do that because it's like a smicha klusha or not. And I always thought that it might be exactly the opposite, that maybe you could even be mas mechacherim because of the perspective that we have developed. In the same piece, he also points out that if you look carefully in the Me'iri gives the impression that the ability to give smicha to others isn't a natural right, it's a kind of implicit power, you know, that you receive from the person who gave you smicha, you know, and he receives from the person who gave him. So this is something which should echo or at least resonate in our minds, because in a way this was the discussion between Rabbeinu Yonah and the Bali Tosis, Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rivosh and the Bali Tosis, regarding Netilas Rishus Mireish Galusa and Minanasi, right? Number one, do you always have to go back to the Reish Galusa and the Nasi to get that level of heter, or does somebody who receives it have the ability to carry it on? And even if they do they because that's a status and it's, you know, totally transitive, or because you know, it's at least implicit that they carry that authority unless it's explicitly taken away from them? And then you get the whole Rivash point, which is fine, maybe we could tolerate this while the institution exists, you know, but once the Mishaleach, you know, is no longer alive, that's where we, you know, cut our losses. So that whole discussion was a discussion, there the Chiddush was, right, in the opposite direction, namely, the Pasht, if you ask me, I mean, Bali Tosas say it's transferable, the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rivash were saying, no, this is a din, and on the contrary, the Rivash was saying, don't compare this to Smicha, a Samuch can be Masmich because he's a Samuch. You know, but Mekabel Rishus Mireish Galusa or Min Anasi, he can't be Nolta Rishus because he's not the Reish Galusa and he's not the Nasi. Right. So that whole discussion is backdrop for this discussion, but the some Achronim want to be Medayik in the Me'iri that, you know, the only reason that there's a Koach Lahasmich is implicit. And that's an interesting point. But again, both in terms of the previous question that we raised, and in terms of this question, the idea of being mechalek between the different phases of smicha, meaning smicha classical, smicha netilas rishus mirabo mireish galusa min anasi, smicha or whatever you want to call it, or rishus of elim kenotal rishus mirabo, or whatever the modern smicha is, the idea that you might be mechalek, you know, with regard to these questions, is very, very reasonable. Regarding modern smicha, also just also to note, we talked about some of the different views. I just wanted to add, and we talked about Sefer Shtaros, and we talked about again the Rivash and the Rama, and I mentioned Dr. Revel's article and the Abarbanel and all of that. So I just wanted to also mention that the in the Sugin Moed Katan, which we discussed last year when we learned Ksuvas, which is part of the problem, right? It wasn't a problem. I enjoyed it. I hope everybody else did. But in the Sugin in Moed Katan and Daf Yud Ches, the Mishnah there talks about what you can do, b'moed. It talks about your Erusin and Nisuin b'moed. Mishnah and the Gemara. Anyways. So the question of filling out certain kinds of shtaros is discussed, and it's not so clear what all of them mean. What are the igeres rishus? So it's interesting that Rabbeinu Nissim Gon on that Mishnah and the Ritva also on Yud Ches Amud Beis to Ramasal igeres rishus suggest that these are piska de rabbanusa. Okay, so that's just also very interesting. To figure out historically, what that meant, and what these things were, how did people, get licensed for smicha? Again, Sefer Shtaros we know, but this is apparently there were klafs of rabbanus out there. Okay, so these are things to be aware of. Also, just one other point on the smicha part: we noted the other day that Rabbeinu Hananel's view is that there is that the Tanai is not the way the Rambam understands it and others, but that the Tanai is whether you'll receive smicha or not. So just to flesh that out a little more, it could be that Rabbeinu Hananel was, I think his reading is a little bit connected to the Pashtus of the Gemara, but I think the idea of a smicha which is omedes libatel may be something that Rabbeinu Hananel thinks is a stira minei ube, meaning the idea that you can split the license is one thing, that you can, temporarily bequeath and then rescind smicha is something which he seems uncomfortable. Now again, that doesn't mean that you can't lose smicha, either if you get, if the confidence of the tzibur, or if you behave in a certain improper way, and in light of the discussion of the Ksos and the Minchas Chinuch, maybe even if you lose some of the credentials after the fact, whether it's in Lumin or other things, that's a different story. But the point is that if it's somebody who's roy l'smicha to get smicha, amanas that it's omed lehi batel, the idea that either on a license level and especially on a gavra level, maybe that's something that Rabbeinu Hananel was just completely uncomfortable with, and I think that's intriguing. Good. Now, just a couple of quick points regarding what we're doing yesterday before we start on Pshara. So I gave you to look at, I don't know, we didn't discuss it yet, the Ramban al HaTorah in Bamidbar. Yonatan, you saw it? Yeah. Adoni Moshe Kila'e. Yeah. Right? Which one of Chazal's, classic and my favorite, Chazal's ever, Hatel Aleim Tzorchei Tzibur, and there'll be Kolam Eileim, but that's not the part that we're talking about, but it is a classic. So what, of course, was going on with this Doni Moshe Kalai? So the Ramban has an interesting piece, right? What does he say, Yonatan?
He's discussing whether or not Nevi'im have to treat the other Nevi'im like a rabbo.
Yeah, does the din of Talmud al-Yora bimkom rabo apply to Nevuah, essentially? And the Ramban's whole narrative is that, Eldad Meidad Misnabim Bamachane, that basically what was happening was that it wasn't the Nevuah which was an atzilus, for Moshe Rabbeinu, his overflow, or his transmission, however you want to understand that, right? Ner Le'echa, Ner Le'meah, whatever it was. But this was an independent nevuah. That's what we're saying. Eldar Meidam Nisnabim B'machana means this isn't. This is an independent nevuah, and that basically what Yehoshua was saying was that just like Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo is Chayiv Misa, so too Misnabe Bifnei Rabo B'nevuah, right, is also Chayiv Misa. You have the line there.
I'm
And then basically the Ramban tries to explain that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was like an Anav Mikol Adam, right? So, yeah, go ahead.
Amal Midivar Abosenu Nira, starting from the middle, I guess. Nira Kihaya Haminag B'Yisrael Shalol Yidna Be'Adam Be'Atidus B'Makom Navi Gadom Imenu.
Yeah, B'nei HaNevi'im is an expression that we're familiar with from Tanakh, right? Implying that there's a, that kind of a, there's a relationship in the Vua as well, right? You could have thought, oh, every Navi by definition is, you know, somebody independent with a kesher to the Rabbono Shel Olam, and but the idea that there would be like a father son or a school in the Vua, you know, is what makes this pshat possible. That's why the Ramban is amazing, right? In his, you know, sensitivity. Go ahead. Therefore, the problem was, since you have the part about the Atzilus, earlier, yeah?
Was that earlier?
I think so. Just to get it on the record.
Yeah, it's earlier. From the beginning, I guess. Sure, start from there. Hatam is a ki Moshe diber al ha'am et divrei Hashem ki hu yatzel min ha'ruach asher ala v'itim al ha'matitz And then the line that I read earlier.
Yeah. So that he was Mocha.
Yeah.
Keep going. Go ahead.
And the line I read earlier, Bamidur was in Nira, Kihaya, Minam Yisrael, Shalit, Nabea, Dambat, Titus, Pimakom, Naviga, Domimanu, Avahoka, Makarov, Kitamido, Behem, Benanavim. Kach Amr Besanhedrin, Bishon Lamanda Amar, Moshe Mace, Hindu Gomer Yoshua, under Moshe Kalaim. Elamanda Amar Aliske Shalov,
Slav, right?
Yeah.
Michael Aim. Now, Dibi said, Moshe, Vazki, you know, the Yambu, whatever, that's disrespectful. That's really the content of the Nebuah. But if he's talking about the Slav, so what's the big deal, right?
The Havali Kemora Allah Halafne Rabba.
Yeah.
Vichain Lamanda Amar Al Gogumago Pinit Nabu, Vakach is Kiru Od Binion Devorah Mitzach Megillah, Moshe Amar, Kihu Arab, Umacha Al Kvodo, Umitabe, Vesameach Bekach.
Yeah. So this is a very interesting issue. So the Margolius Hayam, which I think I told you to look at if you got a chance. You saw it, Yaakov?
Yeah.
So what does he say?
He compares this to the din of Talmud al-Yorah proper and says that potentially this would work differently than Talmud al-Yorah, because here this is Nitan l'mechilas kavod, whereas Talmud al-Yorah is something more.
Yeah. No, so he basically seems to say two points. One is that you know, the idea of Talmud Rebbe is a different kind of relationship because there's a certain you know, educational process, a spiritual formation, you know, and so on. You don't really have that in the same way, you know, in the Nevi'im. Moreover, the Nevuah is authentic, right? So the concern for, you know, inaccuracy, or even for a lesser psak, that part of it doesn't apply in Nevuah. So this, again, we've seen four or five or six different, you know, very clearly delineated issues like this. You know, what is the relationship, you know, when you can isolate in either direction the kavod part from the tochen part. So this this idea in the Margolius Hayah, I would just also add one more, and that is that, you know, there's a din of kovesh and nevuaso, you know, later Sanhedrin topic, you know. Kovesh and nevuaso is chayv misa. So, you know, the idea that you could apply Talmud al-Yoreh is not so simple. Moreover, there's a din in Nevuah. Kol Navi is misnabe, you know, in his own signon. So you might say that there's no superfluity in Nevuah either. So there are good reasons to be mechalek. In a way, the Ramban applying it is mechudash. But again, also his suggestion of Rav Macho al Kvodo Kvodo Macho implies that that works in Talmud al Yorah generally, and that of course brings us back to the discussion of Chiddush Aran and Rav David Bonfield, and then the Ramah and the possible Rashi Tosfos and so on and so forth. Okay, so that is another piece. Say again?
Rambam
Gemara, well, does the Gemara say that it's Talmud al-Yorub El Kain Lato Rishos
Mirabo?
What? I mean Bifnei Rabo?
Yeah.
So clearly like that? Okay, I mean, the Havaleh. I'm saying that it sounds like the Ramban takes it. Maybe not.
Well, he also seems to expand it more, because he says, it doesn't apply to Rabbah, it says, but how come Navi Godom Imenu from the ending of
Rabbah? What's that?
He says it applies to any Navi Godom Imenu, not just your Rabbah.
Rabbah, yeah. Okay, no, you're right. So, but either way, this is Mechudash that... Right. Either way, it's mechudash that you would apply this rule in this application, given the difference between the institutions of nevuah and again, that's why I think the Ramban introduces bnei ha-nevi'im, that idea, you know, the school idea. Okay. Just very quickly, also on tzurber rabban and chazil and nafshei, as we discussed, there's a debate whether or not that is midin mechila. Or my suggestion, which I think has a lot of subtle support, and that is the difference between a formal and an informal psak. So just to point out that the Gemara says that there's an exception to Tzur B'Rabban Chazil Anafshe. David, namely, what's the exception? Tzur B'Rabban Chazil Anafshe, but not Gemara Neiruvin, right? But not if it hit Chilbo, right? If you already started asking the Rebbe, then even if it's Tzur Rabban Chazil Anafshe, it's not going to work. Either Hitchobo or Yoni. Or just say the Gemara Neirvin. Well, Hitchobo means he's already started, and what's the other condition? Or Muflag B'Chachma. Right? That's the Gemara Neirvin. So, the idea of Hitchil, again, if this is a Din of Mechilas Kvodo, it's an interesting clash because he's mochel. On the other hand, the level, I guess, of bizoyon or zilzol or the chi of kavod, once hitchil bo is greater. The idea of muflag. Now, these are cases. All I'm trying to say is, if you take the view that this is based on mechila, it's not so obvious that atchil and muflag should matter in terms of his willingness to be mochel. But I think what it shows once again is that the mechila, according to some, just works, and according to others, whether it works, you know, is a function of whether or not in the aftermath of mechila, objectively, you no longer look at this as merit and a lack of kavod. And I think for that reason, hitchil or muflag, you know, are going to be exceptions possibly to that rule. If we're talking about the formality of it, that's another different kind of a chiddush. Well, the hitchil bo we certainly understand. Once he starts asking the question, you know, he's turning to somebody for psak, and that's certainly different. On the other hand, muflag, the presence of a muflag renders what otherwise would be informal psak, you know, more formal. That I find hard to understand. So that, I think, is an interesting question. Either way, it should be noted that the Rush, we already talked about this, that the Rush thinks that the din of Tzur B'Rabban Chazil Anafshe is limited to Sar Sakina, meaning issues of kind of Sarara, whereas the Hagosa Shri, some other Rishonim explicitly disagree. I mean, Pashtus of the Gemara is that the Gemara equates Sar Sakina with Psakim. Again, this particular Gemara is about Sar Sakina. So it's just interesting that the Rush is Mitzamtzem, and that the other Rishonim think that it applies to the whole package. And this gets played out in Shulchan Aruch as well. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin across the board, and the Pisrei Tshuva raises the question, how come we're ignoring the Rush and those Rishonim who think that this doesn't work with anything other than Sar Sakina? Similarly, it should be noted that, you know, the Gemara introduces muflag and hitchil in the context of Tzur B'Rabban Chazil Anafshe, as we just explained, right? But since these are factors that override the regular parameters of kavod, right, as we've discussed, or of formal as opposed to informal psak, you know, which doesn't come into the rubric of such a violation. So it'd be interesting to ask whether or not Hitchil and Muflag are factors that play a role in any of the other situations that we've been dealing with. Ah. So the Beis Yosef suggests that it does with regard to Talmud Chaver. Because if you have a Talmud Chaver, then normally the rule is that a Talmud Chaver only is prohibited b'fanav, but if it's shelo b'fanav, right, whatever, however you define b'fanav and shelo b'fanav, shelo b'fanav, Talmud Chaver doesn't have this, but let's say it's shelo b'fanav, but it is hitchil bo, right, or we're dealing with a muflag. So that is the Ramah quoted. The Ramah quotes the Beis Yosef here in Sif, where is it? One second. Which one is it?
Dalet.
Okay. Osalonim lahoris lifte rabali olim v'cholamora lefon of chayiv misa. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Correct. Then the question of the tilas rishus, which we discussed yesterday. Bimu rochok mi rabo yud beis mil v'shalo adam dvar halacha b'derech mikra yachal hashiv aval ikvatz malahoro v'leishiv lahoris afilu sofalim asur ad shiyamus rabo ad shiitan l'rishus v'kolze b'rabo muvak, says the Ramah. I will Talmud Chaver afilu toch gimel parsaos shari. Fine. V'yesh omrim demikomakom lifnei rabo mamish asur. Okay. V'afilu shelo b'fanav mamish imitchilu b'kvod harav lomar sheishalu l'rav osha rav muflag b'chachma v'zikna ein lahoros b'iro. That's the Beis Yosef. It says Beis Yosef migemara perikadar. But again, the Gemara is not talking about the parameters of Talmud Chaver. The Gemara is talking about Surban Rabban and Chazal Anafshe. In theory, depending on how you understand that, that could be a whole different issue. So the Beis Yosef is assuming either that they're parallel issues, or that, you know, whatever differences there are, still the factor of Hitchil Bo and Muflag apply to both. So that's an important issue. Okay, and then finally, just two more points, or three more points quickly, with regard to Svarim, right? So we spent some time about Svarim, there's much more to talk about, obviously. Mipi Svarim, Mipi Sofrim, you know, Mipi, you know, Mipi Ashmua, you know. So there's an interesting, there's a tshuva that quotes the Nor of Yehuda. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's in the tshuvas of the Nor of Yehuda. You know, the opposite perspective. We encounter the perspective that the Orchas Chaim, that, you know, the din of Morabcha Kemor Shamayim doesn't apply Bizman Azeh, you know, because our Abayim are our Sfarim. Okay. And that ends up being Lakula, right? Then we also had, you know, Lechumra, was it the Shvus Yaakov and the Pesachei Tshuva, who said that, you know, just like there's a din of Lifnei Rabo, so there's the Lifnei Hasfarim, you know, as well. But the downside, then I talked about the proliferation of Svarim and you know, databases. So there's an interesting psak that is quoted in the name of the Nor of Yehuda. Apparently, you know, people started publishing a lot of books. And, you know, both in terms of, I would say, three things, but two of which they speak about explicitly, in terms of Bittel Zman, but especially in terms of Michshel, like everybody was publishing, I don't know if it was publisher Parish or what it was, but everybody was publishing their Chidushei Torah and their Piskei Dinim. And I say, in difference to the Bittel Zman, there was a question of Michshel and people's ability, this is the third point, to be discerning, like, you know, a book is a book. You know, so it's a published author, there's a certain, like, authoritative air about it. You know, that's the way psychologically that people are. So also just in terms of diluting, you know, the real serious Svarim. So that's the other side of svarim. You know, like anything, there can be too much, you know, of a good thing. So, and that's what I say, you know, in the world of databases and you know, where, as I say, the keystrokes don't discern for you, you know, the weight or even the history and at what stage of halachic evolution things are, you have to be very careful. It doesn't mean you shouldn't use them. It just means you have to use them very carefully and wisely with discernment. So the Nota Bihuna, they made a takana that people should not paskin svarim that, you know, include piskei halacha until they're 40 years old. Imagine that. So, okay. So that's an interesting. I think it's in the Tshuva Me'av. I found it in the back of the you know, the newer Shulchan Aruch, the Machon Yerushalayim. You know, I guess it was ironic. They're publishing all these things, and you know, they have this thing in the back about, you know, over publishing. So, yeah. So that's an interesting perspective. Regarding the question, somebody asked me yesterday, you know, what about all these svarim that, you know, these likutim svarim, you know, that kind of, you know, give you all the lomdus on the topic. So, you know, something very, it's a very similar, you know, kind of issue. I mean, obviously there are teams of people who work on these things, and, you know, some of them are very fine, most of them, I'm sure all of them are very fine Talmidei Chachamim. And, you know, when teams of people work on something and they're experienced and they also have today computers, you know, they can come up with a lot of interesting material, and can save you a lot of time in terms of looking around, and it can also save you a lot of effort in terms of, you know, being on a, you know, kind of a straighter and narrower path in terms of what people have said on a topic. So obviously there are both in terms of efficiency and even in terms of content and substance, there's much to benefit from such books, whether they're, you know, the what I used to call, or they, I assume they're still green, the green books? Yeah? The green books, and now they have these other books. You know, there's a proliferation of all these kind of books. Also reflects, you know, an increase in Limud HaTorah, which obviously is a very good thing. At the same time, I think that, you know, you have to be careful with them, because you don't want to lose the immediacy of the text, which most of these things do not have. They're telling you what, you know, what the Rajba says, what the Ritva said, and what the Nitziv said. It's their read. You know, they're deciding how much they want to quote and how much they don't. They're not, you know, providing you, you know, just with the... It's not a Shita Mekubetzes, basically. It's a hodgepodge, maybe a good hodgepodge, and it's their perspective. What you lose is the immediacy of the text, and of course, the originality of your own analysis of the text, as faulty as that may be, but it's your nofech mishalcha, both in terms of making a kinyan and in terms of, you know, sometimes, you know, finding something illuminating based on your own, you know, mind or experience or order of exposures, etc. You know, and you can lose that. So I think these things, you know, have benefits and they have hazards. And what I would counsel is that, you know, you should always learn the topic first, and you should learn the classical things, certainly the basic Rishonim and even other things by yourself, and you should try to struggle, and that's how you grow. And even if you're, you know, prone to making mistakes, this is all part of the process. Then, you know, when you finish the topic, if you know, if especially if you're in a framework where you have a shir and it's somebody who has more experience and, you know, is doing part of that for you, you know, that's one thing. Even then, you know, if you want to look then what some of the, you know, teams of people or experienced people have put together, you know, sometimes they come up with amazing, you know, added interesting things. Either things that you missed or just things that add. But then you're doing it from a position of strength, and you're not diluting, you know, your own analysis and your own effort. So I think that this is, you know, just like I'm scouring, you know, Piskei Tshuvas and Siman Reish Mem Beis, and, you know, I'm not looking up every, you know, one of the tshuvas that one really should, right, as Robbie demonstrated yesterday. You know, you'd get so much more out of it, but you have to draw the line at a certain point. But if you've done the Rishonim on the Sugya, and you've done, you know, the basic Achronim and the Poskim and Shulchan Aruch, so the Piskei Tshuva is, you know, it was the raid safer, I guess, of its day. you know. But you have to know how to use these things. If you start straight with the Pischei Tshuva, you know, it can be very fascinating, but it gives you a skewed view. So you have to be careful in all of these things. Anyways, regarding the requirement of 40 years, which we mentioned the Rebbe Yehuda thinks is good for Svarim.
Why not say the same thing about the Rishonim themselves?
What do you mean?
Like using Rishonim is like relying on Great Svarim.
No, because the Rishonim are...
Did the Rav actually say that?
The Rav? Not that I'm aware of.
Didn't he say when he was younger we didn't have cheap Svarim like the Rav?
You mean when he screamed at me? Yeah. Well, he didn't say cheap Svarim. He said... Oh, cheat Svarim?
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't say the word cheat Svarim. The it is a Maisa Shahaya Kachaya that the Rav was in the what?
Sounds like a
Maisa
Shahaya
Lo Kachaya. No, Maisa Shahaya Kachaya, the Rav was giving this shiur and he was like struggling a little, you know, which could happen, which usually happened at some point. And he was thinking, and you know, a certain Talmud and the said, well, I, you know, the Rajba, you know, and he, the Rav could lose his temper too. So he said, what do you mean, you know, the Rajba? You know, don't you, you know, doesn't this generation of Talmidim understand that you have to, you know, put a little effort of your own and you shouldn't rely on every crutch? He didn't say cheese, he said crutch. You know, every, he said, you know, if I, you know, when I was learning with my father, you know, he would slap me in the face if I quoted him the Rajba before I figured out the whatever. But
not effectively the same
point? No, so then when he finished the, you know, the... When he finished, you know, that part of it, then he said, so what does the Rajba say? At which point he heard what the Rajba, and he said, yeah, very good. It's exactly what we said. Let me have the Rajba. No, I mean, I think the difference is that the Rajba is a perush on the Gemara. It's not a compilation of other perushim, you know, that is put into the form of, you know, Mahalchim. You know, Rashi and Rabbeinu Hananel and the classical Rishonim are all a perspective, a different reading of the Gemara. Again, I would never say look at the Rishonim before you figured out, you know, the basic Shakla Vitarya of the Gemara and the Rashi, or to look at Rishonim before you've, you know, to look at later Rishonim before you've looked at the classical ones upon which they are based. We're talking about two different, I guess, distinctions. One is not shortcutting or hearing, you know, or using, I mean, a lot of these books, and again, I'm not criticizing them at all. I think that they can be constructive. I just think it's how you use them. But a lot of them are basically summarizing and, you know, taking a perspective on the issues or on their understanding of them, you know, by putting them in a certain framework for you. You don't have the immediacy of looking at these things in their full context. You're usually not seeing the full text, and also then you're just hearing how they think it all fits in. That's not true of the Rishonim, right? The Rajba or the Ramban or the Rashi. Now again, what the Rav was trying to say, you know, in addition to everything else, was, you know, he was struggling with at the time the Gemara or the Rashi or the Rambam, etc. The suggestion was being made that there was some insight in the Rajba, you know, that was going to help illuminate that, which ultimately he agreed was true. But he was just saying, okay, you know, I don't have to read the Rambam or Rashi through the Rajba. I should be able to focus and figure it out myself. But the Rav wasn't against reading Rajbas. He read Rajbas too. You know, again, he didn't have it in this when he was growing up, but he had Shas Gemara, so he had the Ran. He didn't have the Rimigash on Shavuos, so he just assumed when he assigned Rimigashes, you know, on Shavuos that people were reading the Ran. But that's also an economic and a historical point. But I think that there are two distinctions. One is the immediacy of the texts that are important and that are in question, as opposed to seeing them secondhand, number one. And number two, instead of working yourself initially to try to understand the implications, right, and then to cumulatively put together, you know, the different perspectives and the range of perspectives on the topic, to rely on, you know, this experienced person or team too early, right, so that you're not making that kinyan on your own. I don't think that's comparable to, you know, reading like certain core texts.
And this tshuva that we're quoting in the back of 20 Shalom Shemarach,
yeah,
these are the going to primary texts over secondary.
No. There are two different issues I'm talking about. What? Yeah.
Which would apply equally to Rishonim.
Well, no. I mean, the assumption with the proliferation, I'm not sure what point you're trying to make, but I don't think that's true at all. What the Noda Behuda was saying is, listen, every Bar Beirav with a printing press, you know, can, you know, and now, you know, with a printer, you know, can write his own Svarim. So he's saying three things, at least the way it's quoted. A, you know, they're wasting everybody's time. Who are these people? He doesn't mind if they publish after 40, and they have a certain, seasoned reputation. A, they're wasting our time. B, they're telling us, you know, they're mechudash psakim, right? And you know, they're not Reb Moshe Feinstein or Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. You know, they're guys with the printing press. Okay, guys, third tier guys, second tier guys. But no one knows that because, you know, it's in a published book. But the idea that we always want to hear from the greats, from the classical, we always want to hear from the Rabbi Yehuda, right? And we always want to hear from the Rajba. I mean, it's a quality control and a concern for the dilution of, you know, if you're reading everything, and you know, without being discerning, then that, you know, that's not conducive to your learning either. You need to know what the hierarchy is. When I'm building a topic, I don't mean I, but when one is building a topic, right, it's important to build it. We sometimes will use extreme views, but you want to build the legitimacy of a certain mahalach on legitimate people, on people who have a certain stature. Then their extreme views are important too. But because we know that they have a certain wisdom, you know, they have a certain attunement with the system. But what he was saying was, we need to have a takana to kind of limit, you know, everybody from just publishing, so that the quality, you know, and the impact will be what we need it to be, and not just, you know, the book you happen to pick up in the library. Can't compare that to Rishonim, who. P.M. Anuchayim, you know, and, you know, we're, you know, Tzame LeDivrayim, right? Imagine if we could find more material of the Ramban on Sanhedrin, right? Or we could find, you know, the Rajba on Sukkah, the real Rajba, not the printing, which is the Ritva. Or we could find the Ra'ah on Shas, or the Raiva, or the Yad Ramah. We could find a real Yad Ramah on Kedusha, right? We know who the Yad Ramah was. So of course we would embrace that. We would be excited by it. But that's different than just the indiscriminate... and again, I happen to think that all these things can be used well, including these kind of books. You're in a position of strength because you already know the topic. You already know what the Rishonim. That's my point about the Mishnah Berurah even, which is a great book. But why should you be reading Magen Avraham's and Taz's through the Mishnah Berurah, except for efficiency reasons now and then? But if you read the Magen Avraham and the Taz, and then you see how the Mishnah Berurah quotes it, or what melding he's doing.
Well, the counter-argument is that you're not reading the Magen Avraham, the shame reading the Magen Avraham.
Why not?
The Magen Avraham in order to get to the correct interpretation of Shulchan Aruch, or to get to the correct Pesach.
Well, because, I guess my view would be...
The straightforward extension, which I think I've heard explicitly by Shemer Blachman, is that even when you're reading Rishonim, you're only...
I would not formulate it that way. Okay. My view is that, and this is what we've been doing all year, that the different contributions of Chachmei HaMesorah become part of the Mesorah, and of course they're reading the Gemara and they're trying to understand the Halacha, but their individual contributions are part of the evolution. And part of the way Torah Shebaal Peh was intended always to unfold, and therefore we enormously give them credit for that reason. Omer Davar B'Shem Amro, and I think the more these are all people who are, you know, fully integrated into the system, and yet they're individuals. That's what the Rav describes very beautifully in the second half of Ish Halacha. Right, you surrender to the system, and then you become an inside player. And then as an inside player, you have the capacity for chidushim, but that's all part of the Mesorah. So I would not accept. I don't know, you know, what that formula, where that formulation comes from, and people are, other people are certainly, you know, welcome and entitled to have different views, but it's definitely not consistent with how I understand how the system works. So okay, good. One final thing about Mem Shana. So again, the sense of maturity and experience. So that is what does get codified on Lamed Aleph. It's interesting because we talked about the Rambam's omission in Hilchos Talmud Torah of Mem Shana, and that's when the Lecha Mishnah brought in the Orchas Chaim, right? Idea. But what's fascinating is that it does get codified. Mem Shana does get codified in Shulchan Aruch. So Kol Talmud Chacham should also bechubano seinu bedaber b'fnei bishugalu b'menu b'chacham apa b'shalomad b'menu klum. Right. That's even if he doesn't get chiv misa, it's not the right thing to do. Haga the ein la adam lahoros ad arba'im shana im yesh gadol b'menu b'ir apa pish eino rabo. By the way, after that, and this is a whole topic, a really fascinating topic, Chacham she'asar ein chaber rashoy lahatir mishikol hadas avlam yesh lo kabbalah shata'a, this is from Rabbeinu Yerucham, o shata'a b'dvar mishnah yuchal lahatir. And then he goes on to discuss this whole issue. What are the parameters of, you know, overriding isurim? Okay, but that's I'm not going to go into that now. That's really also a very telling system, you know, issue. But what I do want to say, just one more second, is this idea of Arba'im Shana. So two things. Number one, there's a debate whether Arba'im Shana Mashma, Arba'im Shana Mishanolad. That's Rashi and the Ran. Altosus and Sosa thinks that it's 40 years from the time he begins learning. That's an interesting issue. The Pashtus, it's not about how much, is it about, in other words, how much experience he has, or is it his intellectual and emotional, you know, maturity, including his ability to balance, you know, search for truth and conviction with humility and an understanding of the totality of the system. The majority view, it's 40 years old, not as it is, by the way, in other things. You know, when we say 40 years in as a Baal Tefila, you know, let's say in you know, Yom Kippur and so on, you don't mean 40 years since he learned how to daven, right? Anyways, but it's an interesting issue. Im yesh gadol mimenu, that too is an interesting argument. Mashma v'lim shneim shavim mutar. Alfa pishalo higia l'arba'im shana. Aynu kipirish rashi aran. Aval atosis shan pirish b'shavim hod amar she'ein lahoros an arba'im haynu b'shashavim l'gadol ir b'chachma v'gadol ir higia lahora. So basically what the machlokes we've shown him is really interesting is whether or not to talk about the, you know, the again, the balance between you know, intellectual achievement and maturity. So what emerges is maturity just a you know, if you have equal everything else, so maturity is an added factor, right? Or on the contrary, maturity is such a strong factor that, you know, it can only be overridden by inequality. Those are the two days in the Rishonim that the Shach speaks about, and that's also a very fascinating issue. But what I wanted to really note was that the Pesukei Teshuva here quotes once again whether or not we should be mechalek in the issue of Arba'im Shana between Hora'ah of Isur V'Heter and Dine Mamanis. Pesukei Teshuva again. Ayin Teshuva Shlus Yaakov. Kuf Mem Shehela Dedafka Horas Yisav Heter Kaamar Avam Mutar Ladun Dine Mamanis Afshelo Yigil Arba'im Shana Umikomakom Ladun Yichidi Roy Lahachmir Melo Shein Gadol Mimenu Beir Mashen Ken Tzarif Legimel. So again, this is an interesting light of all the work that we've done on you know, Ein Don Yichidi Ela Echad and so on. But once again, you have another expression. We've had, you know, five or six or seven of them already, where there's a debate, you know, whether even chalik between Dine Mamanis and Isur V'Heter. And as we said, it's a dialectical kind of an issue because, you know, there are chumras in Isur V'Heter, and there are chumras in Dine Mamanis. Okay, but this is another example where you have this machlokes. And then just the final point to make is that to remind everybody that there's a machlokas, what is a Talmud Chaver? So the issue of Talmud Muvak, Talmud Chaver, as it comes up all over the place, Bifnei Rabo, Kriya in Avelus, a whole bunch of issues, Amida Bifanov, in general, there's a machlokas, what is a Talmud Chaver as opposed to Talmud Muvak? Rashi and Erevin focuses on, again, the level, intellectual slash Torah level of the people involved. The Talmud Chaver is somebody who's an equal to the Rebbe, you know, and a Talmud Muvak is somebody who is not. But the Rambam, Menuchas Talmud Torah, Perakei Halacha Tes, and the Rosh, and certainly the Rivash and the Tshuva, think it has nothing to do with the level of the Talmud vis-a-vis the Rebbe, but the personal relationship between the two of them, you know, lo lamad mimenu rov chachmasa. And there are variations on this. Some people have both. Some people measure it in different ways. Some people suggest, as the Marik was, that maybe the Hagdara of Talmud Chaver in different applications is different too. So, of course, this is a really, you know, whether the focus is on the relationship or it's on the capability, you know, these are two very, very different dinim. They obviously reflect the bigger two issues that we've been trying to balance, right, showing that, you know, sometimes it's one and sometimes the other, and sometimes, you know, there's an overlap of these two things. I mean, the kavod piece and the psak piece. So again, in trying to figure out the difference between Talmud Chaver and Talmud Muvak in, you know, bifnei, shalo bifnei, you know, hitchil, muflag, you know, what bifnei and shalo bifnei mean, you know, whether mechila works, never mind the chiyuv misa part, whether these differences are quantitative or qualitative, also have a lot to do with how we define Talmud Chaver in the process as well. Okay, that took more time than I wanted, but let's begin with Pshar. Okay. Adam, you want to start us off? Yeah. Let's just start from Hayyam and Base for a minute. Yeah. Esr Rav Shimon ben Gamliel.
Esr Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Omer. Adin b'shlosha u'pshar b'shnayim. B'yot ha'koch pshar mikoch adin. Sh'shnayim sh'danu ba'al edinin yechol matzor bahen. B'shnayim sh'asu pshara ein ba'al edin yechol matzor bahen.
Okay. So what is it? What's the Gemara saying?
The advantage that pshara has over din, that if there's a shak, let's say, in pshara, from a pshara, that they can go back on it. Mashenkin, if there is a ben...
A pshak and pshara, even shnayim.
Shnayim, but by din, it has to be three people before continuing a chalatzar behind.
Yeah. So this is a... And what does the Gemara want to prove from here? Because with the context of the Gemara, as we know, we just skipped the piece because we did it previously, is...
To prove against Shmuel.
Is the question of shnayim shadonu dinayim din, or not. So the Gemara basically is trying to prove. So let's read on with this for a minute, but then I want to get back to the b'chitema. So what's the proof? The proof is that you need three.
B'chitema, pligi rabbanan alei derashbag, v'ha'omer rabbi abo, shnayim shadonu dinayim kol, ein dinayim din. Gavra gavra karamis.
Right, meaning, okay, good. So what do you make of this? Again, we're less interested right now in shnayim shadonu dinayim din, because we've done that topic. Although there's always, you know, more to do about it, but we're very interested about the pshara and din point. Okay, so what do you make of it? Something important here? We're on the lookout. I mean, what we're trying to do is we're scouring, you know, the material here, you know, in the Talmud, you know, then in the Rishonim, because we care about each, you know, one of them and what they say, and the Gedolei Achronim. Right, we're really interested in trying to pick up. You know, the bigger question we're interested in is what, Adam?
The status of pshara.
The status of pshara vis-a-vis din. How different is it? More to the point, I mean, the bigger question. How would you frame the bigger question? How different it is, of course, that's going to be a way to measure it. But what's the bigger question?
Is it based on din?
Is it a form of din? Based on din, a form of din, etc. Or?
Something else.
What's something else? What do you think?
Not din.
You can do better than that. What would you say? You could pick a word if you want, because it's one that comes jumping.
Compromise.
Well, pshara means compromise, right? So that's not going to help you so much. But there's a, you know, Hebrew term, a halachic a term which comes, you know, popping out of our heads when we think about this. But it doesn't matter if you want to use English or Yiddish or some other language, or if you just want to be, you know, use, take a few more words and be descriptive, that's fine too. What do we really look? It's important to know what we're looking for, right? So is this a form of din? If it's a form, let's go back a second. If it's a form of din, so we're going to be looking, our default is going to be